Hey everyone, welcome back to Moms After Bedtime. I'm Megan and I'm here with Mandy and our special guest Paige.
Hey.
Hello.
So Paige is here with us today. She's a licensed therapist and a parenting educator. She is here to talk with us about trying to heal yourself while you're also trying to be a good mom and raise your kids in a healthy way. And so maybe they aren't trying to heal while they're older. So we're super excited to have her with us. As you know, this kind of stuff is like our bread and butter. We love this stuff. So yeah, we're really excited to have her with us today. But before we get into the topic of the day, let's do some wine and cheese. Paige, you want to go first?
Yes. So this week, my wine in the throes of back to school is the extra carpooling. I spend so much time in the car and I'm so used to using that in a much more productive way. Not that carpooling is not productive, but also the number of times I've forgotten my shoes like on the way to the gym and I had to turn back because I'm getting used to carpooling. It's just inconvenient. But my cheese is definitely my oldest, went into first grade, and all last year we spent special time practicing walking home from the bus stop, which is just on the corner. It's only four houses down, like on the corner of my block. But going into first grade, she's like, Mom, I'm responsible. I'm a first grader and I want to walk home by myself. I was like, I don't know, that makes me nervous. And she's like, I know, but I promise I'll do everything right. So we're on week two of her walking home from the corner by herself while I stand outside in the middle of the road, making sure she gets home.
She must be so proud of herself, though.
She is. She's like, I can do it now because I'm old enough. And now she thinks she's old enough to own a lizard, which is a wine for another time.
Very specific like milestone.
That's funny. Oh, that's awesome. Mandy.
So my cheese this week is kind of related to that in a sense of like going back to school, the spirit of going back to school. You know, like there's like the little things in life that like just give you like the warm fuzzies inside, like, you know, like driving down, like when it starts getting warm out with the windows down for the first time, or like sitting at a campfire. Like one of those things for me is seeing everybody's first day of school pictures on social media. Uh-huh. I love it so much. It is adorable. It just makes my heart so happy. All the happy little kids and all the proud parents and all the parents who are like crying themselves to sleep because their kids are going to kindergarten. Like it warms my heart. Although now that I'm a mom, I look at it and I'm like,
it's coming.
Oh my God, that's going to happen one day.
I love the, you know how there's sort of like a trend of buying like the extra large t-shirt.
Yeah.
I have someone that I know that does that, and her son's finally getting big enough that it's not like totally swimming on him. But I remember like when he was just like, it was just his little head and like hands like in the shirt, and now he's older and it's so cute. I want to do that. It's just so cute to see them grow.
I know. That is a cute little idea like that. I haven't even done the math of like what class.
I saw something on Instagram when Eliza's class would be, but I don't remember.
I like sit there on Facebook all day scrolling and like I mean, people I haven't talked to in like 15 years. I'm like,
so cute. Yeah.
So cute.
Right. I
know. But my wine this week is also kind of related that I am still on maternity leave and I'm going to be on maternity leave for the next few weeks, which is great. But Phil is about to go back to work and Isla's going to go back to daycare to her full-time schedule, which is 4 days a week. So it'll just be me and Bren, which will be nice, but also like, I'm just sad that we're like our little fun family summer of everybody together is coming to an end. So I don't know what I'm going to do with myself. Not to mention like now all my friends are back to work. So I can't even be like, hey, do you want to come over and like hang out, go to the beach or something? No, I guess I'll just hang out with the baby. But yeah, so
Ryan, as if you listen, will know that he had kind of an extended paternity leave, and that was honestly so hard when he went back to work, just because that like blip in time where we just got to intimately focus on our family was over. Mm-hmm. And it was like, that was so nice.
Exactly. And I'm not worried about taking care of Ren at this point because he's been home with me for a really good amount of time and Isla will be at daycare. So I'm not like worried about that piece of it, where with Isla I was because he left right. so early. I was a new mom. But now I'm just like sad.
Yeah.
But it'll be good for Isla too to be back in that like good constant yeah. structure. And Phil is like, I'm ready. It's been fun, but I'm ready to go back to work. So, and I don't blame him because I know that I'm almost kind of ready, just like seeing everybody go back to school, knowing that I should also be going yeah. back to school. So, I mean, I'm not going to. I'm like soaking it in. I know I would yeah. regret it if I didn't take the full 12 weeks, but I'm like, I think I'm going to be a little bored.
Oh, my wine and cheese are, I guess, a little school related as well. Or I guess my wine is. So, well, number one, I'm still freaking sick. I went to the doctor today again because I'm like, somebody needs to just fucking help me because like I have a cough. I am still sneezing. I'm still like, this is disgusting, but my snot is like going onto my mask while I'm talking. Oh, it's just so gross. But anyway, so I have this new thing where I have adult ear infections now, I guess. So I have an ear infection again. And so now I'm on antibiotics. So,
oh, no.
And then the pharmacist was like, this might give you diarrhea. So I'm like, cool. Tomorrow's open house. And I'm going to be shitting my pants. That's great.
So there's never a convenient time to shit your pants. Yeah. That's
true. Well, it might be a good excuse if there's someone like in my room that I like move along, like, oh, excuse me.
But I need to tap out.
But I guess kind of like with that and it being bad timing, school started with all the students. And by all, I mean all of them are back full time. We're everybody's masked, but our classrooms are freaking packed. I've never had this many kids in my class because not only are we all back full time, but our school has never had this many students at once. Our numbers are just huge. So I have for some people, this might not seem like a lot of students, but I have about like 24 in each class, which for our school is pretty big. And my classroom is really not that big to accommodate that many kids. So it's been a little overwhelming to me. Like we talked last week about overstimulation, but I'm like, maybe I have not a very high threshold for visual overstimulation because having that many kids is... it just looks like chaos to me. So that's it's been not as easy of a transition that I thought it was going to be, but hopefully it ends up being a good thing.
All I can think of is like, that's just all the more papers you have.
Yes. To
oh my god. Okay, so I have them. Yeah. So I have them write a letter to me every year just so I can like get to know them. And it helps me put like a name to a face. And then I can be like, oh, you like anime? I don't know anything about anime, but you like it. But I write back to them on those. And I spent my entire day, any free time I had, doing just one day of classes of writing back to them. So I'm like, you know what? Maybe I just won't give any homework this year.
That sounds like a good idea to me.
Yeah. So it's been... I'm scared. But anyway, my cheese in all of that is that I have been like very purposefully forcing myself to take 30 minutes every night as part of my like nighttime routine to just read. I love to read and it relaxes me. So I'm like, if I just make it part of my routine, maybe I'll keep up with it. Obviously, I'm not doing it tonight because we're recording. Mm-hmm. And I don't have my 10th grade class planned for tomorrow. But yeah, so I'm just proud of myself I've kept up with it so far this week. And it just feels good to read. And I'm not like scrolling my phone and all that stuff. So I just put a timer on, read for 30 minutes. And it feels good to have that as part of my like structure.
I need to incorporate that.
It's been nice.
I miss like reading real books.
I know. I'm like, I'll also actually have our book for book club read by the time I need to have it. I'm notorious for not finishing books, but I'll actually have it done this time. But so yeah, I'm mostly just saying it so I can hold myself accountable. I've said it to the world, so now I have to keep up with it.
All right. Next week, I'm checking in.
Okay.
Yeah. I feel like reading is like a mindfulness activity. Reading, actually yeah. reading. Can't focus on too many things at once except to read.
And it's like a nice escape. Right now in our book club, we're reading a historical fiction, which I I love historical fiction. And so I'm just like putting myself, I'm in the 1920s on a farm. Ooh, yes. So
is that the setting? Because I have not started the book.
Well, it starts in the 20s and then it moves to the 30s. So
the cliff notes. No. The thing that sucks is I always do audiobooks and I don't like audiobooks. I'd much rather read, but I just don't have time.
Yeah, I get that.
But it's honestly because I'm not doing what you're doing. I'm not like setting aside time, which I need to do. So
we'll see. I probably won't keep up with it, but so like I said, we're really excited to have Paige with us. I'm gonna hand it over to her for her to kind of give us a little more detail about who she is, what she does, and to sort of talk to us about the topic that she's coming to us with today. So the floor is yours, Paige.
Thank you. I'll take it. So I am a licensed therapist, and my specialty in Therapyland, what I call it, is working with kids and adolescents with trauma, anxiety, depression, LGBTQ issues, the whole shebang. And so something I noticed while working with kiddos is there is some kind of gap in there where there was really an opportunity to meet the needs of the parents and kind of unite parent and kid in a communicative process. And so that's kind of how Parenting with Paige was born, which is my handle on Instagram at Parenting with Paige. I wanted to provide as much information as possible to as many parents as possible. And this was the platform I chose to launch it on. Since then, I have a website and I do like a free parenting class every month to talk about main points and issues. But what I'm really passionate about, and I often talk about being a fierce women's advocate, is helping women heal through the parenting journey. And the idea that as we parent, there was this quote that's like, people need to heal before they have kids. It's like, well, like, that's great in theory, but what if we didn't honestly know we needed to heal until we had kids? And that is the very like real world concept of parenting. There's things in your face that you don't know about until they're in your face. So today, that's kind of what I wanted to talk about, was learning some reparenting work of our, you know, inner child, I think is like the fancy way to say it, but really just kind of understanding how we were parented impacts our parenting and how we can try to do some healing in the process to hopefully raise kids that don't have to heal the same way we did.
I was going to say, I think that really resonates with me, the whole idea of like, what if you didn't know you needed to heal until you had kids? Because I think I've definitely discovered so much about myself. I think it's hard. You don't really realize how much you have to look to yourself until you have kids, and you're really overanalyzing everything that you do and say and think and the way that you carry yourself, and anything in the past that you need to work on. So that makes a lot of sense. Also, who has time to heal before you have kids?
I was just going to say,
hopefully you're just living your best life.
Right. Like, if I waited to like heal myself, I would have already gone through menopause by the time. I'm totally on board with healing yourself. And I also think, kind of like off of what Mandy was saying, is that I think having a child makes you want to be a better person. And part of that, I think personally, for me at least, is healing. So I love this topic and I'm excited to learn more about it. Ready for some questions? So our first question is, what are some examples of triggers or reactions we may experience as parents based on how we were raised?
Something I think is unique to kind of the generation we're raising children in is that we're kind of on this cusp of a whole change in the mental health community, or the belief of the importance of mental health involved in our parenting process. Mm-hmm. So I think that we're in a really unique space in time where the concept of healing as a parent is almost near, like, oh, I'm a millennial. This is what we do now, we heal. But that's the truth of it. It almost wasn't a concept. So it's like now we're in this new cusp of parenting where we're aware of kind of the consequences of how maybe we were raised affect us. And we want to provide something different for our own children. But we didn't have that insight 10, 20 years ago. I think that we're just in a really unique opportunity. And a lot of us are waking up to that. Mm-hmm. So triggers. I have a really great example of my own trigger, actually, because almost anything can be a trigger, kind of like in last week's episode with overstimulation. Like, that's a huge one for me. Lots of things happening, especially in the coming home from work transition. And it's just like, ah! But so my husband was really trying to support me in this concept of having our oldest take a bath. And she was like digging in her heels in the power struggle. And I was trying to stay, you know, quiet and let him take over because he was just trying to support me and get her in the bath. And somehow the whole situation, I was like washing dishes with silent anxiety, like, oh my God, something's going to happen. The whole thing blew up and she's like sobbing and like punching the wall or something crazy, like throwing stuff in her room. And he tries to calmly talk to her and it doesn't work. So he leaves and I just go over there and I'm like, so what's up? What are we doing? And he's like, I already tried to talk to her. She doesn't want to talk to me. And I was like, well, she's in there sobbing and she might be in a better place to talk now that she's calmed down a little more. Like, will you try again? He's like, I'll try again. Like, trying not to tell him how to parent, but also telling him how to parent. I was like, I can't handle it. So he goes in and like talks to her again, and she's still really angry at him. And then in the background, I hear her talking to her little sister, like out of the bathroom window, about how mad she is at dad and like how they need to get a new dad. And like, they're talking to each other. So they're coming up with all kinds of plans. But I go into the bathroom and she, like, you could tell her face is red and puffy from crying. And it just like hurts my mom's heart to see her that way. I'm like, what's going on? And she's like, dad hurt me. Dad pulled my hair. And adults aren't supposed to hurt children. That right there was a trigger for me. And I was like, I instantly felt myself get hot. And I was like, he what? Like, I know my husband. I know he doesn't just pull our kids' hair. But I was like, okay, her perspective is that you pulled her hair and you intentionally hurt her. And that's not okay with me. And I was like, I mean, I wasn't saying this to her. But I was like, okay, did you tell dad that he pulled your hair? She's like, yeah, I did. And he's not supposed to hurt me. That's not nice. And I was like, okay, trying to like maintain my own composure. So I was like, let's go talk to dad together so you can tell him how you feel. All right. So I'm trying to move into some level of repair work with this big meltdown that happened. And so I go out there and I'm like, honey, Alayla said that you pulled her hair. And he was like, I didn't pull your hair. And I was like, wrong answer. And he's like, I'm sorry if you think I hurt you or I pulled your hair. Like, I didn't pull your hair. And I was like, because you would never hurt her on purpose, right? And he's like, yes, I would never hurt you on purpose. And I was like, and adults aren't supposed to hurt children, right? He's like, yes, adults aren't supposed to hurt children. It's like, and you're sorry, right? Like, slowly getting more and more overwhelmed. And he just gives me this like death glare where I know I took it just a step too far. And I was like, ooh, okay. And he's like, why are you asking me these questions? And I just like slowly back away. And then I get her in the shower and I just am like, why did I ask those questions? And I honestly, like, that moment was so shaking for me because I've been working so hard on understanding how I was raised impacting my parenting now, or how I direct my husband's parenting, right? And I was like, you know what? I asked you those questions because that is what I needed to hear when I was six. I was like, and I know that that's probably hard to understand, but I wish that there was an adult in my life that would have said, I would never try to hurt you on purpose. I'm so sorry that you got hurt. And that's not something that I got. And I wanted to make damn sure that was something that my daughter got, right? But that was really like a pivotal moment for me in understanding that I'm a therapist. I did a lot of healing work to become a therapist. And there's still healing work I need to do. And I don't know until it's in my face. So that's just like one example of a moment that could be triggering in your day-to-day like parenting.
That makes a lot of sense. I just picture you like holding up cue cards for your husband. Like, but I totally feel that too, like trying to be like, what if maybe think of this, but then wanting to step back and be like, you're your own parent.
Kind of like going off of that, sometimes I think I get triggered by the reminder that my husband had a different upbringing than I did. And to be quite honest, I think he had a little bit healthier of an upbringing than I did. And so sometimes that like gets to me, that like gets under my skin. I'm like, you don't understand like where I'm coming from with some things. And some things just don't logically make sense to you because you didn't experience it. And I think just hearing you kind of talk about that story, I'm like, oh, wait, that's totally, I think, personally a trigger for me.
I've talked to my mom about this too. I remember as a child that if I had a big emotional moment, like especially when I was younger, like that tantrumy age, she would just put me in my room and shut the door. And I've talked to her. She's even said like that was what the pediatrician told her to do. Like if your kid's having a tantrum, put him in the room, shut the door so she's safe, and just leave her in there. And so every time I had a big like emotion, I was put in my room with the door shut. So I would kick and scream at the door until I just like got tired and fell asleep. And now that is, I think that's why like Isla's big tantrums are very triggering to me in a sense of like, I just so badly want to handle them the right way because I don't think that they were handled the right way for me. Again, I don't think these things were done on purpose. I think like that was the education our parents got. But now that we know that that's like not the healthiest way to handle it, I think that's why that's like so important to me. It can be so triggering to me.
Right.
So it all makes sense. I think it all comes around full circle.
That's a really good example.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And it's like, we don't necessarily understand how these things are going to impact us until we're in the throes of that with our children. And I was like, man, I didn't even realize that. And it's true when I think about the relationship that other people had with their parents, or especially the one that I'm working to cultivate with my kids, I have a lot of grief. Like, I didn't get that. And you know what? As an adult, I still don't get that. And I will never get that. And that's been a big part of learning how to heal from it and work through it.
I think that connects with how can we still have a healthy relationship with our own parents and families and include them in our child's lives while still healing and breaking the cycles from their impact on us as children?
God, that is a great question. And the first thing that comes to my mind when we ask that question is that something that you want, right? Because we're all kind of in different places with that journey. Like, is that connection something that you want and something that you want for your own children, right? And if that answer is a yes, this is where I definitely think getting real good at boundaries comes in handy. So a really good example, again, from my personal life is I wasn't raised by my mother, but I would love for her to be the grandma figure or a nana. She calls herself Nana. So Nana to my children in some capacity. But with that, I've had to take like incremental steps in what that looks like for us. And so I'm aware now of my mom's behaviors and her patterns and what she can and cannot show up for. And so I really try to set us up for success with the experiences with my mom that I want my children to have. For example, I was working one afternoon and I had two sessions that I needed childcare for. So I let her take care of my kids all by herself, like unattended, which in my realm is a big deal, for those 2 hours. And like, yes, I had anxiety. Yes, I was only two blocks away, but it allowed for them to have a positive experience where I kind of controlled the extra unknowns of what they could and could not be exposed to in that period of time.
So kind of thinking about our own parents and how we were parented, how can we make peace with our pasts as we try to navigate parenting the way that we want to parent? How do we heal our own trauma while simultaneously fixing maybe a generational pattern?
There's something called a coherent narrative in therapy world, which some people know about, but it's a really vague term that can be hard to nail down. And so when you experience trauma, what happens is that there becomes a sort of fragment in the memory and experiences that you've had. So when you create a coherent narrative, you're giving that experience a beginning and a middle and an end to be able to make sense of it and to move it into a new level of processing. So that's just kind of like a real light breakdown. And that is what I talk about. So I'm running a book club right now called The Madness in Motherhood. And we're all reading The Power of Showing Up by Dr. Dan Siegel. It's his newest one one that just came out. And the book itself is tailored a lot to how you can help your kids and what it means to show up in attunement. But like the background piece of that is a lot of the parental healing and understanding how you were raised or responded to in those different ways is impacting you now. And so something that I do, like I hold Zooms and we're all on an interactive, we're on Voxer, which is an app that's like a walkie-talkie. You can send videos and chats and stuff to each other. And I created a workbook, and part of the workbook is describing like, how can you take one experience that you feel like is still sensitive to you and create a coherent narrative, a beginning, a middle, and an end. And doing that doesn't necessarily mean forgiving, right? We don't have to forgive the experience or not grieve it, but it's helping us make sense of what happened and why it happened. And then as you are able to do that and to share it, whether with yourself, you journal it, a lot of people love to write it down. So like a great example for me is that hair pulling example with Alayla, where like the first time I shared it, I was very raw and like I cried through most of it because that was a new understanding for me on something I needed as a kid that I didn't get. And even sharing it here with this podcast, I was like, I was on the verge, but the experience, the intensity lessons, because I make sense of it and it wasn't fair and I'm not okay with it, but I'm making sense of what happened.
Wow, that's really powerful. Like the whole idea of you don't have to forgive, you're just helping yourself understand. I guess I've never looked at it that way. And I think that that's definitely an aha moment.
Absolutely. And sometimes that comes with confrontation and a lot of times it doesn't. Right? It's just for you to have that insight. And as you understand what happened to you and why it happened to you, all that information can then be used to impact how you parent now.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. So we've sort of started talking about this. I'm going to kind of mesh two questions together. So what are some of the ways that we can implement inner child healing into our everyday life? Because I know sometimes we talk like big ideas, but maybe what are some like smaller micro things that we can do? And what's the benefit of working on your inner child?
Yeah, so the benefit of working on your inner child, and this is true for parents, like love all the mamas here. It's also true if you're not a parent, because how you were responded to emotionally, physically, mentally growing up impacts how you interact within all kinds of relationships, not just romantic, but also friendships. Whether or not it's easy to facilitate a level of trust, whether you're like anxious about it, do they really want to be my friend? Do they not? All of that kind of plays into that kind of childhood experience just by the nature of the science of how the brain develops and how attachment is developed. When you want to do inner child work, my first recommendation is always going to be creating a coherent narrative. But you have to be able to recognize when it's happening first, right? So a lot of the times when we're feeling triggered, we're getting upset. So when I say triggered, it's not like, yo, you triggered, man. Like, I mean, sometimes I am, but what I mean is you're starting to have some kind of physical or emotional reaction to what's happening. So what a specific skill that I teach is called STOP. I don't know if you guys have heard that. It's an acronym. So you use it. And what you do is you, the second you notice you're having a physical or emotional reaction to something that's going on around you, you stop, you take a breath to ground you and get you back in the right mind. You observe what's happening and try to make sense of why you're reacting that way. And then you make a plan. So a lot of the times we react big and then afterwards there's a level of guilt or shame associated with like totally normal human behavior.
You're talking about me.
Totally normal human behavior. Absolutely, I'm talking about you. I'm talking about every single person that will listen to this podcast because it's totally normal human behavior. We all do it, all of us. And so that's a place to start. And as you practice developing that awareness, you'll be able to catch it sooner and sooner and sooner and earlier on. So it's just being able to recognize it and then put it into use to kind of wire those neural connections for you to change a habit.
That's like validating to hear as well, because I do feel myself like being able to identify some triggers and then, like you said, sometimes react too big. And then in the end, I end up feeling guilty. Mm-hmm. But I feel myself like slowly recognizing it, but sometimes it's still too late.
Yeah.
But that's kind of validating to hear that, like, okay, the more you can practice, maybe the sooner you can catch it, as long as it just kind of becomes like a new habit.
Yes. And then something important to know is Okay, first, we're not like all tribal and community based anymore. We're kind of on like mom island. And it feels like we're the only ones that have these responses, but that's not true. Every single person has these responses and every parent has these moments. And I love to default to science because it's hard to refute. And the science behind attunement talks about how realistically any normal human is only like matched up and attuned and responding correctly to your children about 30% of the time.
Wow.
So like set your bar at 30. Let's start there. Set your bar at 30. And then when there is what's called a rupture, so we react really big and it affects the relationship with our spouse, with our friends, with our kids, it's not, the impact isn't in the rupture itself. It's in whether or not you do the repair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We bring this up so much on the podcast because I think we need to hear it a million times to feel better about that, because that is so validating to hear.
I think it also, like, obviously we're talking about motherhood and parenting and all of that, but I love that you're also kind of addressing your friendships and your maybe relationships with your families and especially your spouse, because I feel like quite personally, my husband gets the brunt of a lot of the work that I'm trying to do and the healing that I'm trying to do, because he's the person I'm the most comfortable with. And so I think that kind of recognizing that you have to look at it in all your relationships is kind of eye-opening and validating and a relief that, all right, I can repair this relationship. It's not, you know, that's what the real work is the repair for that chunk of time.
Absolutely. That's the lasting impact. Yeah, that's the lasting impact. It's the repair. And then you're modeling there for your kids, especially you're modeling that ruptures in relationships are normal events, because we're not perfect and we're not perfect people. So there are going to be times when we don't get along. There's going to be times when we disagree. There's going to be times, you know, when mommy makes a choice that wasn't the best for us. But being able to model that repair helps us understand that just because I got mad at you doesn't mean that I love you any less.
Mm-hmm. I feel like that relates so much to the story that you told in the beginning about like the trigger for you wasn't the action, it was the lack of repair, basically, that you got. So I feel like that's just also validating of like, that's what matters the most, because it's also so important to teach our children that like, you're a human being and human beings are not perfect. And
yeah, and feelings are okay.
Right.
I'm like, look, we all have feelings. Grownups cry. It's totally okay, whatever feeling you're feeling.
That's so true, because I think, I don't know if I'm speaking for our generation or whatever, but the more people I talk to who are, you know, millennial of the, I feel like that we were never told emotions are okay. And so I feel like
I was shut in my bedroom with the door.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, you have been on the phone. Mandy and I have been friends for a long time. Mandy has been on the phone when I would have like a temper tantrum as a teenager, because my dad I think it was the same thing. Like, he was told or learned that if you ignore, they'll regulate. But if you never taught me how to self-regulate, how am I supposed to do that?
We are on the cusp of a whole new concept. Honestly, truly. Like, we have the opportunity, and a lot of us are moving into that space in parenting where we are openly discussing emotions, and we have enough of the backing of science now to understand, like, oh, guess what? Like, we won't know how to regulate unless we're like taught and work on it. And it's a lot harder because adults have temper tantrums too. It's a lot harder when you're an adult than when you're a kid.
That's validating too.
You know, we're talking about how like our generation now is so aware of all of this. And I know, like, for me specifically, I just borderline like hyper aware, like I need to like maybe take a step back, because I'm like, I just don't want to mess up my kids. So like, how do you kind of cope with the fear or like the anxiety that comes along with that of putting our children in like similar situations?
Absolutely. So my big theme for 2021, I like picked a thing for myself because I'm like, if it's scary, you should do it. Was use fear as a compass. So the fact that you're already aware enough to be afraid means something. You're less likely to broach those behaviors and these experiences because you're scared that you're going to do it.
That's true.
And so you're already a leg ahead, right? Let me validate you right there. You're already a leg ahead because you are aware of the things that you don't want them to be experiencing. Mm-hmm. And so as you develop that awareness, kind of come up with a checks and balance system. It's like, okay, this is when you develop the awareness. You're like, okay, am I making this decision because it's in the best interest of my child? Or am I making this decision because I'm triggered by something that happened to me? Mm-hmm. And there are plenty of experiences that I've had where I'm like, yeah, like I almost got picked up by a predator as a kid, right? Because like grow up and then you walk home by yourself and you do nothing. Like some dude was like, I lost my dog. He met me in the park. Nowadays, I'm a true crime junkie. I'm a therapist. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh no, sir, you do not have a dog named Candy. I know better. But like little Paige didn't know that, right? So I'm like, am I going to let my kid walk home from the bus by yourself four houses down the road? And I was terrified. I was very nervous. So I split things into what I can control and what I can't control, because whether we like it or not, our children are going to move into a level of independence. They're going to grow. I want to foster that in a safe way. If I control so much that that's not something she ever does, she's going to continue to grow and become independent and then not have the skills she needs. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay, what can I control? What can I not control? So yeah, I told her that it makes me feel nervous. I was like, but I wanted her to have that opportunity. So we drove the bus path from the school to the stop. Like, this is where we're going to stop. The bus will stop. This is where you get out. This is where you walk on the sidewalk, right? Even though we did it all last year, we walked through, like, we don't go play with friends or parents of friends or anybody that asks. We say, my mom needs me to come home first. We always need to come home first. And then, you know, something that I can't control is the code words. I was like, okay, what's our code word today? Remember, nobody can pick you up. Or you can't go with anybody unless they give you the code word. And honestly, like a huge discredit to our generation was teaching stranger danger, because like less than 1% of abductions ever happened by actual strangers. Yeah. So I always, I'm always like, look at that, my true crime coming out to play, guys. But I was like, okay, so even friends, even adults that we know, like we don't go with anybody unless they have the code word and we have to come home first. So I was afraid and I asked myself that question. Am I going to keep her from walking home because that's what's in her best interest, or it's because it's what's going to help my anxiety, right? And as a parent, I'm anxious. I don't know. Is that just a millennial thing too?
I wonder why.
But then, so after I answered that question, it would be in her best interest to continue, like, right, we're working on our foundational skills of that. So I was like, okay, what can we control for her safety and what is out of my control? And like, what does that look like? And so then I worked through teaching her those skills and practicing the skills that we could control. And that did help my mom anxiety quite a bit, because she was like, I'm responsible. I'm going to come right home. Like all the things. And I give her lots of praise, you know, when I meet her at the end of the driveway, four houses down. But that's just part of the process.
That's a good example.
Yeah, that is a really great example. I'm already having anxiety about, because to be quite honest, if we still live in the house we live in, Eliza will, our, the elementary school is like in our backyard. So I don't think she'll even have a bus. She'll be like a walker or whatever you call it. I'm already having anxiety. Like my husband is like, oh, look, she can walk right down the street and be right home. And I'm like, so I like that example because I think a lot of the things that I'm scared about as my daughter gets older are my own anxieties. And I don't want that to be a detriment to her.
Mm-hmm. Which I feel like is another thing that for other people probably are like their triggers. Like maybe if their parents were overly anxious about certain things and what's the word, like projected that on their kids.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love that you said that you told her it made you anxious.
I am extremely transparent with my emotions. Not that I ever make them in charge of my emotions, like make me feel better. You hurt my feelings. But I'm open. Like I need a minute because I'm feeling frustrated. There's too much noise right now. I cannot answer your question. It makes me nervous to be without you when you're walking home. So those are just some of the ways that we communicate, and it's great to hear her kind of verbalize also now, you know, as they get older. My four-year-old would be like, I'm so frustrated. It's like, yeah, you are. Yeah, girl. And my oldest will be like, I just need some space, and like take herself to her bedroom and like draw pictures about how mad she is at me in her journal. She drew a picture for my husband last week, and she like traced her hand in a thumbs down in her drawing journal and then put fort. She meant to write fart. And she was like, this is for you, Dad, because she was mad at him. Thumbs down, fart. I was like, yes, express those feelings.
But that's a lot better than punching a hole in the wall. So that's great. Punching that fart fist right through the wall.
We need to make a graphic of that for the Instagram. Okay. I love that. How can doing this work inform our parenting in a positive way?
The simple phrase of when you know better, you do better. So when you can make sense of your experiences and how and why it happened to you, you can use that to inform how you parent now. This is how I felt in this situation and why. Because those are so vivid for us. I know every single person listening to this podcast has a vivid memory of how they felt at least one time in their childhood with something going on. And you're like, yep, nope, that felt unfair. So then we use that to inform our practice now and the parent we want to be.
That's true. I feel like, and even I think our generation is, we mentioned, so aware of a lot of things. But I think that even if there's like one pivotal moment, everyone carries that through no matter what generation. Like my mom, her big thing was that she was not going to force us to eat food that we didn't want to eat because she was forced to eat food and it like made her sick and she hated it. So that was like the one rule she was going to like follow was I'm not going to force you to eat food you don't want to eat. So I think that sticks with us. And now I think our generation is just even more aware of just the whole, everything, like everything too much.
Too much.
Like I said, I don't understand why our generation would
be. Our anxiety.
Well, awesome. Thank you so much for joining us, Paige. I just love learning about this kind of stuff. So it was great to hear your thoughts and opinions and your answers.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. Like I said, this is something that I'm so passionate that as many people know about as possible. And especially, yes, I work with my kids and teens in therapy and I love them. And I want to help their parents heal through their parenting journey and those mamas heal through that parenting journey to become the parent they want to be. That's a big part of why I do what I do.
I feel like it speaks a lot too that you are mostly working with the children and the adolescents. So like you're seeing the effects of parenting kind of firsthand and maybe especially how they are perceiving like how they're parented.
Absolutely. I
mean, probably as personal as you can get, but like validates a lot of what you're saying of like, you know, you're seeing it firsthand of how the parenting effects the children.
Yeah, I feel like you're educating and super informed.
Yeah, and that's like, that's the best part. Like, I wouldn't know what I know if I wasn't working with my kids, as I call them, all the babies. And if I can, like, I really operate on the belief that parents love their children and what they do is with love. Like, it's rare for me to meet a bad parent. You do what you do out of love. And there's probably some miscommunication or some discrepancy in like how you're doing it that's resulting in what we work with.
Just thinking about like you were saying, like I feel like parents like way back in the day thought it was okay to let their kids ride in the bed of the truck too. Like I feel like we're just learning new things as we go. So it makes sense. Like if you learn more, then you're going to follow through with what you learn.
Exactly. Which is why the grace piece of parenting is so important. There was never born a perfect parent. Parenting is a skill that you learn. And the type of parent you want to be is a skill that you learn. So allowing yourself to fail and learn and try again is one of the most instrumental pieces in the parenting journey.
These are the things that they don't teach you when you're pregnant. They just teach you like how to push the baby up.
They don't even teach you postpartum care. They're like, don't worry, you'll just have a kid and go home. It'll be fine. You're like, why am I bleeding and sore?
They only taught me about the purple crying.
And you get one appointment and that's all. That was a great conversation. Again, thank you so much for being with us today. We will see all of you next week. In the meantime, rate, review, subscribe, follow on Spotify, and interact with us on the Instagram. Where can we find you, Paige?
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram at Parenting with Paige and Facebook Parenting with Paige.
Awesome. Okay, we will see you next week. Bye.
Bye.